the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Joining you here on a Wednesday early afternoon, and the Bucks have only played a couple games since we last chatted. They've had quite a few days off, of course, with the trip to Paris, France to take on the Charlotte Hornets, but there is so much to discuss here. Over the past week and a couple days, so much has happened. Of course, the Bucks did defeat Charlotte in Paris. They had a very interesting game back in the States on Tuesday night, and their win over the Washington Wizards, and we are here to chat about all of it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast, and on the other line is the one and only Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Matt Velasquez, how are you? How have you gotten over the jet lag? It's been a few days now. Are you good to go?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm over the jet lag. I'm fine. I think what people say, it's a lot easier coming back than it is going there. I can attest that is true. I was able to kind of get my normal sleep and get into my usual routines and all that back home. Whereas in Paris, I was a mess. Like I was waking up at 4 a.m. I was, you know, going to bed at 4 a.m.
That doesn't leave a lot of time for actual sleep if you're waking up and going to bed at the same time.
No, every day was just an adventure with figuring out how long my body would allow me to sleep or when it would allow me to sleep, you know, but can't complain. I was in Paris and I was, you know, acclimating to the time changes and the jet lag and all that is part of the deal. And I gladly accept it.
We will, of course, talk about the game in Paris that I figured would be the primary topic of conversation when I arranged for the date of this particular recording. But like I said, a lot has happened since then. And
yeah,
of course,
but you were wrong.
I was so wrong, so wrong. We are not going to be unfortunately not speaking any more French because there have been news stories since then. Of course, the biggest story in the NBA world and the sports world in general was the death of Kobe Bryant on Sunday in a helicopter crash near his home, 41 years old, absolute icon in the sport, and certainly that impact is being felt everywhere, especially including with the Milwaukee Bucks, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then on Tuesday night, this game against Washington, a 154 to 136? I don't even remember. It was all Monopoly money in the end.
It was 151-131.
151-131. Chris Middleton responsible for the 51 in that number. 51 points for Middleton in a spectacular offensive performance. The defense wasn't at its best, but obviously Chris Middleton was on fire in the absence of Giannis. So this is where I want to start, and we'll certainly talk about Middleton. Lots to discuss there. But Giannis sitting this game out with a shoulder injury, a couple things that might be red flags there. One is that they've had a lot of time off with the trip to Paris. Doesn't maybe feel like time off given the travel, but this was only their second game, I want to say, in an 8-day, 9-day window. So the fact that Giannis was given this particular game off came as a little bit of a surprise, and I think Coach Mike Budenholzer sort of intimated that this is not one of those injuries in air quotes. This was a real thing that they really felt like he couldn't go. And as a lot of people noticed during the game, Giannis wasn't even on the bench, which is unusual. I mean, there are past games where he's sat out, where he's been rebounding at halftime in a suit. You know, he's out there with his teammates and doing all kinds of calisthenics and stuff and cheering and all that. So his absence was notable. Now, you were there. It sounds like he seemed fine after the game, and he gave Chris Middleton a sign for his 51-point game and was his jovial self. But that did strike me as odd. How do you feel about it? Where do you think things stand with this particular injury?
Well, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, in terms of Bud, before the game, he was asked about if it was kind of a rest day, and he was like, yeah, it's a genuine, legit shoulder injury. You know, but in the very next sentence, he was saying that they're very hopeful this isn't something that's going to be long-term or cause him to miss any significant time, you know, but there's something going on. And so, you know, he said it happened over the last few days that he's been feeling it. He was at practice on Monday. You know, he was on the court shooting free throws afterwards, you know, doing stuff, looking totally normal. He talked to us afterwards. You know, it seemed like a totally normal day. He didn't make it onto the injury report until later that day. And he hasn't been on the injury report this season because of that injury. So I think that it could just be something that, you know, there was no particular incident that Bud was aware of that caused it to happen. It just was feeling some discomfort. You know, and Bud made a point of saying, too, that, you know, Giannis is hard to hold back, and and today's not a day that they would probably hold him back. We'll just see, kind of how it goes the next few days. But then in terms of Giannis not being on the bench, I wasn't that surprised by it. I mean, I know that he was there before the game. Like when you are a player who is not playing due to injury in a particular game, like, you have no obligation to speak to the media. And he came into the locker room before the game when we were there. And, he kind of did a couple things quickly, and then he like went and presumably got treatment or he went somewhere else. But then during the game, like it's been common for him, like in the games that he hasn't played, where like, yes, he has like rebounded for Kyle Korver at halftime or done whatever, sat on the bench. He would usually get some treatment in the back during the early part of the game. Because I think at that, in games like that, you, as kind of an injured player, you usually give preference to guys who are going to play and let them get their massages, let them work with the performance staff, let them do all the things they need to do to prepare for the game, and then you can, since you don't need to be on the court for the game, you can get specific attention while the game is going on. And so that's probably what happened. It's not normal or regular that he would be gone for the whole game. But he was definitely watching. Maybe he just was undergoing, more treatment or maybe getting a workout in or something that he thought was the best thing for him to do at the time. But he was watching. He called Chris Middleton's performance legendary. He was one of the most excited guys for Chris. And you mentioned like the 51 sign, a la Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. everybody was all in on it. And that was one of the things that stood out, is that, as a team, everyone was thrilled for what Chris was able to accomplish. And Giannis was certainly part of that.
And I know that this gets into dangerous territory because we're talking about amateur psychology and trying to gauge somebody's grieving process. But there's no secret. Giannis was a huge fan, admirer, colleague of Kobe's and had worked out with him. There's a really great video that's kind of circulated of his time with Kobe Bryant when he went out and trained with him and how he got there 3 hours early and was so excited to work with him. And he's obviously feels very connected to Kobe Bryant. And in the aftermath, he deleted both his Twitter and his Instagram accounts, which was notable. I mean, probably, I think we can all agree on a macro level, that's not the unhealthiest thing to do for anybody, let alone a professional athlete who probably gets a million notifications a day. But that did seem like, it seemed like it could potentially be part of the grieving process. And again, I don't want to, who knows? I don't want to get into his head, but he is a private person, and to have gone through a loss like this, you wonder how hard it hits him. How you talked to him on the Monday, the practice after that, and he did talk for a long time, talked for almost 10 minutes, I believe, about Kobe. Where do you feel like his head is at after all that? And, I guess what was your impression of that whole, the whole experience talking to people after Kobe's death?
Giannis he's still processing. I mean, he made sure to point out, I'm human. Everybody handles things differently, and he's still trying to figure out how he is processing the events of the past few days. It's hard. It's really hard for him. It's been hard for, his Bucks teammates. It's been hard for, people all around the NBA and fans the world over. I mean, this is a very public figure, a very prominent figure in the lives of many, and the stories and the videos and everything that just keep coming out. Some people are glued to it. Some people want to read everything, watch everything, consume everything, and like that's how they mourn. And some people want to see none of it. And maybe Giannis is one of those people. Maybe I don't know exactly how it is, but I could see how if you're in that kind of like raw emotional state, maybe you don't want to see whatever's on Instagram because it's going to be all Kobe all the time or on Twitter. And so, maybe the easiest way to keep yourself from seeing that is to delete it and just fully get rid of it. And, that way, even if people are looking to see like, oh, what's Giannis going to say? What's he going to do? Like, they can't even find him. you know, so it's like, don't look for what I'm going to do, say or do. Like, I need to just, you know, just kind of disappear. And it was just hard to see him on Monday. Cause you know, Bud was obviously, you know, emotional talking about Kobe, and Ersan Ilyasova, who talked with us, he was, you know, emotional, about, you know, Kobe, but Giannis, you know, was maybe more so, at least visibly, than both of them. And, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised or upset if he declined to talk to us on Monday. I mean, I'm not going to be upset if a person who is grieving declines comment. I know his status as an MVP and public figure and all that stuff. You know, but you have to give him time to be a person too, and to deal with things the way he wants to. And I was uncomfortable, like, there in the scrum, even like trying to ask a question, or, you know, with how long things went. Cause it's just like, man, I just know he wants to be somewhere else. Like, he wants to be doing anything but this right now. This is not helping his process. This is not, you know, he's doing his responsibility, or what he believes to be his responsibility. And, like, you know, I'll credit to him for that. But it's just so hard to have to work through something like that in such a public fashion, and to do it just, like, you know, for 10 straight minutes, when it was pretty clear that, like, you know, he really didn't want to. And so it's just definitely been tough for him and for everybody else. And it's going to be a process for Kobe fans, for NBA people, for coaches, players, you know, the Lakers entire organization. Obviously their game was postponed on Tuesday. It's going to be a process. It's going to take longer than just a couple of days to unpack and work through.
Our colleague Ricardo Torres caught up with one of Kobe's former teammates, Wisconsin native Caron Butler, and chatted with him about Kobe. That story is at jsonline.com. I talked to Arike Ogunbanwale, a Milwaukee native who hit a couple buzzer beaters in the NCAA Final Four, women's basketball Final Four, a couple years ago. She got to meet Kobe on The Ellen Show. Kobe's her idol. Her dog is named Kobe. I mean, her number is 24. She's been a huge fan forever. So she's playing in Turkey overseas at the moment in the WNBA as well. And so talk to her. That's at jsonline.com. Right now, lots of Kobe content as well. I don't want to get too far away from this Chris Middleton game, but one last thought on Kobe. He of course, in his last game in Milwaukee, wound up being the first triple-double for Giannis, you know, Antetokounmpo. It was an incredible night. Sort of, I don't know if that was considered a passing of the torch to a degree, but sort of felt like that, especially in retrospect. And I don't know, you and I both grew up watching Kobe on TV. If you have a particular memory that really sticks out watching him play, I remember the 81-point game when I heard that headline, really kind of eerily similar to hearing about his death. Like, I saw Kobe scores 81 and thought, that's impossible. There is no way that actually happened. And then the same on Sunday. It's like, that can't be right. It cannot be right. You cannot help but reject that news out of hand the first time you read it. What sort of, what do you remember about seeing Kobe play?
Well, I remember one of the first, like, outside of, like, NBA Jam, which everybody, you know, played at the time, one of the first, like, basketball video games that I really liked was Kobe Bryant, like, NBA courtside on, like, N64. And I was like, man, like, this Kobe Bryant guy, he was so cool. Like, he was, like fresh out of high school, like, into the pros, like, playing for the Lakers. Like, and like, everyone had, like, a feeling about him. Like, whether it was good or bad, or you liked the way he played or you didn't like the way he played. Like, you know, he was the cover guy for a video game. And, like, as a kid at that time, like, you know, that immediately gave him a certain, like, power and importance. And in terms of his on the court stuff, I mean, he, you know, love him or hate him, like, he went out there and he just balled on, like, a game by game basis. Like, he would, you know, we all know the stories, right? We know, like, you know, making the free throws with a torn Achilles. We know, you know, having his right shoulder being injured, and him shooting left-handed, like, fadeaways. Like, we know the tandem, you know, that he made with Shaq, and just how incredible they were, and you know, and combustible too. But, like, just that those Lakers teams with the two of them were amazing. And then, you know, Shaq leaves and looks like, you know, Kobe's kind of marooned there in Lakerland. And, you know, he stays and rebuilds and retools and adjusts his game. And suddenly you have two more championships. And, you know, those are teams that he molded after himself. And, you know, that they got definitely more than the sum of their parts in their ability to win those titles. And just the ultimate competitor, every player's favorite player. I wish I had more maybe like particular memories of him, but I think that just as someone who followed the NBA and was obviously cognizant of his whole career, I think it's just those kind of big things and also just the characteristic traits that he had that made him stand out.
Yeah, he leaves behind a little bit of a complicated legacy that's been covered quite a bit, but you hear a lot of stories about the way he interacted after his career, but especially in the latter stages of his career with kids, with sick kids, and how he, you know, lately has been a huge advocate for women's basketball, both on the college and pro level. I mean, it felt like, I think other people have said this, he had a lot left to give. You know, his legend was still really being written, and I think that's part of the reason why this comes as such a shock, because he had not left the public eye. He was not some guy who used to play basketball, obviously. He was an international celebrity. So very, very heartbreaking story, and a very weird day on Sunday. Also, then we've got this game on Tuesday. So the first time the Bucks are playing since Kobe, since the Paris game. And defensively, I think you could say it wasn't a masterpiece, giving up 131 points to an Eastern Conference team that is not trending toward the playoffs, or at least is only on the fringes of the playoffs at this point. And Chris Middleton goes off with no Giannis, 51 points, 10 rebounds, spectacular showing. It's been a run for Chris Middleton now. The last few games have been really good, the last couple weeks. And I mean,
you could even go as far as saying this whole season.
The whole season, right. And I mean, I think he had such a, you know, locally, we've talked a lot about this, and I don't like to get into what fans are thinking too much. I like to think of myself as giving the fans credit where they do, but I do think they were unfair with Chris Middleton. The way that you were seeing, at least on social media, the criticism of him making the money he's making, it was going to be very tough for Chris Middleton to justify that contract in the eyes of a lot of people. I really feel like he's done it. And I mean, there's a lot of season left, of course, and people will focus on the playoffs, but I feel like this season he's another player. He's just on another level, and he's gotten over an injury and gotten to this level. He's going to be in the All-Star game at this point. I think we can even stop discussing that. Do you interpret that as well? Has he reached another tier? Because, you know, he's not a superstar. He may not even be in that second tier. I think that's fair to say, but he's elevated himself, right? In the grand scheme of the NBA, this is a player that is now officially, I mean, he is a perennial all-star the way he's playing right now, the way he's played this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's been fabulous. You know, and Tuesday night, you know, we saw a lot of the reasons why he's so good. You know, obviously starting the game, you know, making 7 of 7 three-pointers over the first 26 minutes is obviously incredibly valuable to any team at any time, anywhere. But then also, you know, being able to create with the ball in his hands, to make, you know, shots at the rim, shots in the mid range. You know, he had 6 assists, he had 10 rebounds. You know, he was doing all that stuff, and that, you know, some of it, you know, the usual, you know, quiet Chris Middleton stuff. I mean, Dante DiVincenzo was like, yeah, like he had, you know, a big night, and it was a, you know, loud numbers, but it was also kind of quiet still. Like, he was, you know, late in the game, I thought Eric Bledsoe still had more points, but then I looked up and Chris had 48, and Dante was just like, oh well, we'll keep going. like that was, you know, kind of his reaction as he saw that, you know, and Chris also, there were moments in that game where, like, Chris was playing with a lot more flair than usual. Some of those, mm-hmm. like, you know,
the dunk to get to 50, man.
Yeah, and like the turnaround jumpers that he had, like, yes, he normally does those, but like when you are like in the 30s and 40s scoring wise, and you are taking like catch and shoot turnaround, like Kobe-esque jumpers, and like knocking them down with like kind of the, you know, the just the way that he was doing it, just kind of the, not, I don't want to say arrogance, but like with just like the swag, maybe, that as the kids might say, you know, but. Kids. But then in the second quarter, I think we saw maybe the sauciest play. That's the way I termed it, like the sauciest play he's ever had. He pushes off a rebound, and he's dribbling across the court. He gets near the three-point arc. He dribbles behind his back, kind of collects as he steps back. And, you know, Troy Brown Jr., he just hits the deck and falls right in front of him. Chris kind of looks down at him and then looks up, just knocks down the three. Like I mean, that's the kind of stuff, like, if anybody else does that, you know, if James Harden does that, it becomes like, you know, a meme forever. You know, if, you know, imagine if Giannis did that, like, like Pfizer Forum, like, would have, like, just like imploded upon itself. But like, I mean, Chris Middleton doing that is also like kind of, you know, like, you don't expect that from him. And like, just, I mean, the way the bench reacted, like, if you haven't seen the video, the Bucks posted it. I'm sure you can easily find it anywhere else. Also, why haven't you seen the video? Like, what are you doing? You know, just if you go through it and you just watch the bench the whole time, like, it was like, you know, like kids, like, walking down the stairs and like seeing Santa Claus, like, and like just the anticipation and the excitement. It was incredible. I don't even know, but it was nuts. And that's like the stuff you don't normally see. And so he was pulling out all the tricks. Like, he was, you know, pulling deep, in order to find the energy to do what he did. Like, you mentioned the dunk to get him to the 51 points. Like you have to remember, like, that came with, like, you know, 3 minutes left in the game. He already had 49 points. Like, the Bucks had just called a timeout, and he stayed on the bench for as long as he possibly could. Like, the whole team was off the bench, like, ready to get back into the game, and he was still sitting there. He admitted to being tired. He walked from the bench all the way to the opposite corner to get ready for the play they were going to run. Like, the crowd is chanting his name. Everyone knows that he's going to try and get the ball, that he's going to try and score. That, like, there's no way you're drawing up that play for anyone else at that time. Like, there's no chance. And yet he still gets the ball off a handoff from Brook Lopez. And, like, he just kind of, like, you know, has the audacity to take two dribbles, like, straight down the lane. Like, he jumps off his left foot. He already has his right hand, like, raised with the ball. And, like, he just throws down, like, you know, a pretty vicious, like, right-handed slam. Like, super vicious for him, I would say. Because, you know, guys were making fun of him. They've made fun of him before for his, you know, maybe, like, power layups. For Bailey being able to get up there and throw down dunks. You know, it's kind of a running joke with the team. But that was, like, a no-doubter. And to do it, like, to cap that performance when you're tired, when everyone knows the ball is coming to you. Like, I don't care if you're playing the Wizards and it's, you know, the worst-ranked defense in the league. It doesn't matter. Like, to be able to step up in that moment and to dig deep. He didn't even think he was going to get high enough for that dunk. He's like, I just found the power. I just willed myself to do it. Like, it was kind of like an out-of-body experience. It's just really crazy and fun to watch. And you mentioned, like, obviously the guy who's underrated, underappreciated, somebody who's been doubted by Milwaukee fans, by fans around the league, by whatever. You know, Mike Budenholzer, you know, he talked about him being underrated and said, like, yeah, he's just underrated. Like, but I think the rest of the league is appreciating him more and more with the success of the team and individual performances. People that understand the sport know how good he is. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter how he's rated. As long as he's with us, that's all we care about. So it's just and the funny thing too is that he's very much rated by Wizards coach Scott Brooks. Because before the game, Scott Brooks was saying, like, you know, I voted for him for the All-Star team coaching votes, where, you know, the coaches vote for All-Star reserves, and those votes were due Tuesday. And so Scott Brooks mentioned before the game, hey, I voted for Chris Middleton. Let him know so he doesn't, like, take it out on us or anything like that. No one let Chris know, and he definitely put it on him.
I you're hitting exactly on the head why Chris Middleton is underrated. He doesn't throw down vicious dunks. It's not his first move. He also doesn't chuck threes at a ridiculous rate. Obviously, you know, Tuesday night, 7 of 7, he was feeling it. But he's a mid-range jumper guy, which is not how the NBA has developed. I mean, he can hit threes. He's a shooter all the way around, but he's a pure mid-range jumper guy for the most part. And that game, that part, that type of game is not embraced in the NBA, and it just isn't. It's just harder to get behind. And you're also talking about a guy who doesn't like talking about himself. He doesn't have a giant beard. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't talk, and he doesn't use social media as a platform to take jabs at other players or talk himself up. He's just chill, and I think that's something that doesn't always translate if you're thinking about the superstars of the league. He's not a guy that's going to pop to mind right away, and that's there's obviously nothing wrong with any of that. I think what we saw last night, if there is any doubt, you know, there's always the debate of, do you have a true number two, Milwaukee Bucks? You've got a superstar, but do you have a true number two? I look at that last night and I see Scottie Pippen, you know, a guy who is capable. I'm not saying he's that good or has had that career or anything, but that's a guy who can carry this team if the star is out. And that's only one night, only one performance. But what we've seen all year is just left me with no doubt. He is fun to watch and is what you would call a bona fide, quote unquote, number two. And it's pretty fun to see that develop.
When you look at like his stats, like because of the night that he had on Tuesday, you know, he's now averaging 20.2 points per game. And he has currently a 50-40-90 season, 50.3% from the field, 43.2% on threes, and 90% on free throws. Oh, and he only plays 28.8 minutes per game. You know, earlier this season, I wrote, probably about a month ago, I wrote about, you know, he was on a heater when they were playing the Hawks, I believe. It was a month ago. But those were two games in a row. That was the first of two games in a row that Giannis didn't play. Coming off of Christmas, and he was playing, and Middleton was playing great. Then he played, you know, maybe the best of anybody on the Bucks, you know, on that Christmas Day game. And so I wrote about how well he was playing and doing it in so few minutes. And at that time, which I think is probably still true, he had played the fewest minutes of any All-Star last year. Like any returning All-Star from last season, he was playing less than them, and his numbers are still staggering. You know, with the way that he plays, and before the game yesterday, I'll be writing about this, you know, today for JS Online, and we mentioned his All-Star status, and maybe I'll get into some more about maybe other guys on the Bucks who could be deserving of All-Star. Obviously, now the voting is closed, but still interesting since the reserves will be announced on Thursday. But we talked to Mark Lazary before the game, and you know he was asked about how, you know, the Bucks maybe don't have the same numbers individually as a lot of guys in the league because their players don't play as much. Like, yes, Bud is trying to manage their minutes and play them a little bit less and keep them fresh, but also they're just destroying teams. Like, I think they've won 16 games by 20 or more at this point in the season. They have 11 wire-to-wire victories. That their point differential is historically great. You know, it's somewhere around 13 at this point. I haven't checked out today, but that's just like almost unfathomable. And Lazary was saying like, yeah, I know. Like I want, you know, I know that Giannis wants to be out there. You know, if you let him, he'd probably play all 48 minutes. Chris wants to be out there, but they're playing, you know, high 20s in minutes, and the team has the highest point differential. And I think when you The next thing he said was probably what stood out to the most to me. He said, we're beating teams by the most anybody's beaten, more than the Lakers, more than the Warriors ended up doing. And yet, we don't really get as much credit for it because now, all of a sudden, everybody goes, well, it's just the regular season. I don't know. I thought we had to play 82 games, but maybe I'm wrong. So I thought that was pretty interesting coming from him.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, when the Chicago Bulls did this, now there was a novelty there when they were trending towards 70 wins. Now, it was on SportsCenter every night. What are the Bulls up to? What's going on with the Bulls? Are they going to win 70 games? You know, that was, again, that's the first time anyone hit that threshold. When the Warriors were doing it, they were, I think safe to say, one of the more celebrated teams in pro sports history. And it wasn't maybe to the same level as the Bulls because they weren't the pioneer. But you win their first 24 games of the year, people are going to be paying attention to you throughout the course of the year. The Bucks don't have that maybe 24-game winning streak to start the year. But I still think there is an awful lot of apathy is too strong a word, but the Bucks are not thought about that way. They're not being considered in that way, and there is some of that. Well, it's just the regular season. Well, they're blowing everybody out. They're going to be the one seed. Good luck in the playoffs. That's when it matters, right? Before now, I would have said 70 wins, and we've mentioned this probably a little, still a little bit of a long shot. I don't know. We're getting to the point where it's not a long shot. It's not a long shot anymore that they can win 70 basketball games. They've won 9 in a row, and I don't even know if we even care. Like, the winning streaks don't even register anymore. 14 to 15, you know, whatever. That's what they're going to do. They're just that much better, like you said. Have you amended your view on 70 wins? Do you think that is within reach at this point, or are you still seeing that as a little bit of an outside chance?
I would still see it as an outside chance. Yes, the schedule gets a little bit tougher down the rest of the season, but they also just, their lead is just so big in the Eastern Conference. Like, I'm not sure if any games in the month of April prior to the postseason will matter for the standings.
Yeah, you're like, absolutely right.
Like, they have like 8 games or so in April, and they have a really, like, you know, intriguing stretch at the start of April where they host the Raptors, then go to the Raptors, go to the Celtics, go to the Sixers. That's all the start of April, and it may not matter at all. Like, right now, they're up 8 games on the Raptors. They're the only team in the NBA with single-digit losses, and they only have 6. So, you know, it's at the point where, like, they could, like, you know, push towards 70 wins and try and get there, and it's certainly something they're on pace for and able to do, but also I don't know why they would do that. Like, if once you clinch the one seed, everything can throttle down. Like, you can start to play guys like even fewer minutes per game if you're going to play them at all. You can start resting one or two starters every game, and do that until the last like 3 games of the season when you rest everybody the whole time. Like, the pursuit of greatness is one that is reserved for June. Like, that's when they want to be great. That's when they want to be remembered and be playing their best. And so you don't want to risk injury against, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second to last game of the season. That's just not a good idea. And so I think that there'll be enough games that are devoid of meeting to the standings that they're going to err on the side of caution and making sure that guys are rested and ready for a playoff run into the middle of June.
Under normal circumstances, we wouldn't have waited 30 minutes to talk about the Paris game, but this is not normal circumstances, so we'll try to touch on that now. I know it's been a while since the game. The Bucks, that's probably the closest thing the Bucks have been getting lately to a hyper competitive game. Charlotte was hitting all of its shots, led for the majority of the game, or at least the first 3 quarters, and then you get a breakaway dunk from Pat Connaughton that gives the Bucks their first lead. I want to say that was early in the 4th or last play of the 3rd, I don't quite remember. And then the Bucks took it from there, as they are capable of doing. Kind of an uneven performance. I don't know if, you know, when you travel to Europe to play a game, I don't know if you can really be too judgmental about how a team plays. Just on the court, what did you see in that game? Should there be a little bit of concern about the defense, especially when you add in the Washington game where they scored 131 points, that their defense has showing tiny cracks in a pretty solid foundation, or I don't know, what's the big takeaway from the Charlotte game?
I wouldn't really be worried about any takeaways from that game, to be honest. I mean, it's just such a different situation in Paris. Like, it's just a different feel, and obviously both teams are dealing with it, but there's a little bit of extra juice for that game, and, you know, the Bucks just didn't get into rhythm. But it was also a game that, like, we've seen so many times this year. I was kind of sitting there and I was like a little bored. I was like, oh gosh, like, the Bucks haven't led this whole game. Like, they're not playing well, but they're only down by like 4 or 5. The lead's never gotten, you know, to double figures for the Hornets. And the Bucks are just going to win this game by double digits. Like, we've seen it before. It's just going to happen. And that's what happened. Like, that's exactly what happened. Like, the Bucks flipped a switch. Like, their bench really got them going late in the 3rd quarter. Giannis started Giannising in the 4th quarter. And suddenly it was a wrap. Like, it was like, oh yeah, hey, like, we're the better team. We're going to beat you by double digits. Okay, thanks, bye. Like, that's just what they do. And it was funny because after the game, I was in the mix zone. And I was waiting for, you know, players to come out and talk to them. And I saw general manager John Horst, and I was like, never a doubt, John, never a doubt. Just, you know, another game, another double-digit win, huh? And he's like, man, like, I wish I could have your confidence. I'm sweating everything out over here. He's, you know, that's just how he's programmed, right? When you're the general manager of a team, when you work for a team, and you are, you know, pursuing success in the way that they are, like every game, like you're kind of just like on pins and needles. And I guess I'm just different, just having watched these games, and I obviously don't have, any horse in the race. Like, you know, people always ask me if I want the Bucks to win or if I cheer for them. No, I'm objective. I get paid no matter what they do. I got paid, you know, every other Friday when the Bucks had 15 wins, as I do now. Like, it's not different for me. But just watching that game, it's like, well, yeah, this is just going to happen. We've seen this enough times, and it did.
From an international vibe, obviously, you know, obviously Giannis is going to be a big deal because he's a European athlete for one thing. He's an international star for another. So he's a guy that I know a lot of locals when he travels to Europe are going to be interested in. But it sounds like there were a ton of Bucks fans there. Like, and the thing of it is that Charlotte's got Nicolas Batum on their team. He's from France. So I'm sure he had a pretty healthy contingent of fans that were rooting for him and for Charlotte too. So I was struck by how one-sided the love seemed to be. And again, I wasn't there. You could tell me if that was just my interpretation, but hearing that all the Bucks merchandise sold out before the game on the street, and you know that they did sell out this arena. Of course, it's a big deal in Paris, first NBA game in Paris, but it did feel like the Bucks just have this international thing. Am I reading it right? And does that do anything for the Bucks, you know, stateside, to know that we complain a lot about the national attention the Bucks get versus like the LA teams, the New York teams, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But it is interesting to know that on the international scale, the Bucks might be sort of on par with some of those teams.
I mean, they're right. I mean, the NBA is a star-driven league, and they have one of the league's biggest stars. So, you know, if the Hornets had someone like Giannis, if they had someone at the caliber of Giannis, I think they'd be selling merchandise a lot faster too. But I think also like the Bucks do rate. I talked to, you know, a group of four French Bucks fans on the first night I was there, and
loved that story, by the way, jsonline.com. If you haven't read it, loved it.
Yeah. I wrote about the different ways that the way they connected to each other, the reasons they connected to the team. You know, and so they have like a nice little contingent of like hardcore fans, you know, over there in France. Like, also, like, if you're going to go to this game, like, you're going to spend the money, you're going to be one of the people picked in the lottery, like, you're going to pick some team to support. And, you know, like, yes, it was a nominal home game for Charlotte, and some people supported Charlotte because of that, or because of Nicolas Batum. But the Bucks also, like, you know, like I said, they have Giannis. Like, they're the best team in the league. Like, if you're going to jump on a bandwagon because a team is playing in your backyard, like, that's not a bad one to hop on. And it's true. Like, you know, I was out there with our colleague Meg Jones before the game, and it might have even been like 3 hours before the game that the Bucks they didn't have any merchandise left. There was nothing at the roadside kind of stand that they had, you know, the trailer that they had set up, and they had still some Hornets stuff. They had like Kyrie jerseys and Steph jerseys, but there were no Bucks jerseys. They're definitely, and at first I was like, oh, did they not like bring Bucks jerseys? Is this like the Hornets like trailer and there's a different Bucks shop? No, like it was just gone. Like, and you know, I think as a team, like, you know, that can't hurt you know, your kind of footprint or your following. I mean, at all, if you're being able to, if you can rate like that in a foreign country like that, and you can, that's the way you grow fans. That's the way you create memories for kids who watch that game or who went to that game. It's absolutely really great. And when you think about the crowd, I think a lot of the crowd was just so happy to be there. You know, when Charlotte was going in the first half, and Malik Monk, you know, had that crazy block on Ersan Ilyasova, and he, I mean, he had like 31 points. Like, when he was doing some stuff, and Terry Rozier was doing some stuff, and Devontae Graham, like, the crowd was enjoying it. They were having fun. And then when the Bucks started coming back and doing their thing, and Giannis was throwing down dunks, and Pat Connaughton had a steal for a dunk, and Dante DiVincenzo was just doing Dante DiVincenzo things, hustle plays all over the court, high fly and tip-ins, you name it. I mean, the crowd loved that too. And you know, when the teams were introduced, all the Bucks were cheered. You know, Giannis got a huge cheer. you know, Nicola Batum obviously got a huge cheer. Tony Parker was there, and he might have been cheered louder than anybody. Just love they have for him. You know, they were chanting MVP when Giannis was at the line. They were chanting Batum's name to get him back into the game when he was at the free throw line. Just a whole bunch of times. So like, there was just an appreciation and a love for both teams and individual players on both teams, and for great plays. And yes, I think the crowd was more partial to the Bucks. But there were people, I'm sure, who were wearing Bucks gear, who were cheering for things the Hornets did and things Batum did, just because, like, they were, like I said, they were just so happy to be there and excited at the entertainment value of what they were seeing in the first regular season NBA game in their country, in their city, for the first time.
All right, what's the best thing you did in your visit to Paris or France in general? What was your favorite part of the trip?
Oh, well, on Friday before the game, because the game was 9 p.m. local time, and there was no shoot around, there was nothing else to kind of do that day. So Meg Jones and I, you know, she was on her way to Ukraine, I believe, to work on a different story, something a lot more important than basketball, I'm sure. But she and I happened to be at the same hotel, so we took the metro up to toward the area where the Eiffel Tower is. You know, took a selfie or whatever in front of the Eiffel Tower. Kept walking along the Seine, stopped at the Musée d'Orsay, spent some, you know, maybe two or three hours there, checking out the Impressionist paintings, eating lunch, seeing everything that the museum had to offer. All the time, like, talking to each other, getting to know each other, because Meg and I have been in the office together plenty, but we've never had a chance to, like, work together or get to know each other in that way. So we did that, and then we just walked to the NBA house. We saw some protests, walked past Notre Dame. I guess, you know, protests are just, like, ubiquitous there in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
That's what one of my buddies who was there, actually my first sports editor at my college paper. He lives in France, works for the Wall Street Journal in France, covering sports. And we happened to be sitting next to each other for the game.
So oh, that's cool.
Which was really great. And he and I got to have a few meals together. But he's like, oh, yeah, you know, protests. Like, this is what we do. It's fine. It's whatever. you know, Meg and I navigated around a parade. We went to the NBA house. I saw Hugo, the Bucks fan, one of the Bucks fans I talked to. He was there. Yeah, he just living his best life. But Meg also talked to a bunch of Bucks fans who were there about, like, why they were there, where they came from. Some came from Milwaukee, some came from London. Like, you know, so, and she wrote a great story about the atmosphere around the game on game day. And then we're going to walk back to our hotel. And on the way, I was like, you know, like, it's getting close to game time. I don't know what kind of food we're going to have. Let's get some crepes. And we did that. It was just a great day. It was a very long day, lots of walking, probably put in like 5 or 6 miles. Even though it was like in the 30 degrees or, you know, low 40s maybe. But it was just great to hang out with Meg and see everything we saw and then cap it off with the game.
I have a bone to pick with you about that. You sabotaged me because I love crepes with Nutella in them. That is just divine to me. And, you know, I've been trying to watch what I eat, and I'm on the exercise bike. I'm doing my cardio, and I'm checking Twitter, and there you are with your picture of your Nutella crepe. So what did I do? I finished my cardio, and the first thing I did was make some toast and put Nutella on it, or that hazelnut spread equivalent, or whatever it was. So completely destroyed my workout because all I could think about was Nutella crepe in the moment. So thanks for that, Matt Velasquez.
Well, if you want to be more upset, I'll give you some more ammo. So I've been trying to be healthier this season. It's hard when you're traveling.
Oh yeah.
And you're not sleeping regularly because you're going to bed late, waking up early for flights, travel. You know, all this. You don't make the best decisions. So, you know, my wife and I have been trying to make better decisions individually, and we know that our eating habits and our lives are different, so we came up with some rules. I gave rules that apply to me, rules she came up with, rules that apply to her, and we've been kind of trading you know, texts and phone calls when we're apart to be able to hold ourselves accountable and be better and make healthier decisions, all that kind of stuff. And it's all well and good. I followed no rules in Paris. Like,
when you're out of the country, the rules don't apply. That's how it works.
No, I followed no rules. I followed no rules. I just did whatever my heart saw fit. You know, and I've said, yes, like, I did walk around. I was doing some healthy things. I made some good decisions at times, not all the time. But then I came home and I had actually like dropped a pound from like the week before. So
yeah, well, there's a lot of walking involved. That's how they can all eat terrible like food that's bad for them, but still be perfectly healthy. The Parisienne, they just walk around like it's, you know, they walk miles every day.
Yeah, so I mean, this isn't how you're supposed to draw it up, right? You're not supposed to like have rules that are inclined to like make you be healthier. Follow none of them and like make progress, like in the weight department.
Yes, like, that's how the dude metabolism works.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, for those people who hear that and go like, "That's infuriating." Well, try it sometime. I don't know. What can I say?
Yeah, and also have Nutella crepe, because it doesn't matter if you lose or gain weight while eating them. They are divine, and you should absolutely eat them.
No, and you know what? Like, there's protein in Nutella. they're healthy in some way, right? Like, I don't know. I'm going to attribute any good health to eating grapes.
He is Matt Velasquez, culinary expert and also the beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He's been to Paris. He's back. The Milwaukee Bucks are 41-6, I believe, and just tearing up the NBA. Matt, thanks for joining us, buddy. We are going to chat with you again next week.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Find this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or especially Apple Podcasts. You could leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. Find me on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe, JRRADCLIFFE. Fun game coming up at Fizer Forum on the 31st. That's when the Bucks are hosting the Denver Nuggets. Nikola Jokic coming to town. That is one of the best teams in the Western Conference. So Matt mentioned that the schedule is going to be getting a little bit tougher. It's going to start right then and there. There's also a matchup coming up soon in New Orleans against Zion Williamson, who is now healthy and playing for the Pelicans. So that is something to circle on the upcoming calendar as well. And February 6th is a big, big day. That is the trade deadline. We'll obviously need to be talking about that on the next podcast, as well as a big matchup with the Philadelphia 76ers. So all great stuff coming up for the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks for tuning into this podcast. We'll chat with you again very soon. Take care.